Usually, in X-ray tubes or in X-ray imaging systems, the E is dropped, and only the accelerating voltage is mentioned in kilovolts. So when they say 140 kilovolts, it is assumed that the highest energy of the X-ray photons would be 140 kilo electron volts, because it is assumed that that is the maximum you can get. Quite likely, you will get less than that. But that is the maximum, because that's the maximum voltage you have applied. You cannot get more than that. The target material used is tungsten and molybdenum, as I mentioned. The focal spot, there are a few different definitions. It is the area of the target struck by the electron beam to generate the X-rays. So that depends upon the size of the electron beam and the area on the target, but it is also measured on the film. Because you cannot go inside the tube to measure physically the area of the cross-sectional area of the electron beam or the target size on the or the focal spot size on the target, you measure it on the imaging plane, on the film, and then it is called the nominal focal spot. So there could be some effect of magnification, and imaging parameters will come into play. The diameter in millimeters as observed in the imaging plane is the nominal size of the focal spot. So you want a small focal spot to obtain a sharp image, especially when you are magnifying the image by increasing the gap between the patient and the film. Typical spot size is 0.1 to 2 millimeters. In mammography, 0.1 to 0.3 millimeter focal spot sizes are used for better resolution. So this is an important issue, and I'll explain some effects of this point later on. The energy of the electron beam determines the penetrating power of the electron beam. Depending upon which part of the body you want to image, or if it is some other industrial sample, depending upon the density of that object, you have to choose an appropriate penetrating power so that the X-ray beam will pass through and will have enough number of photons on the outside of the body for you to record an image. The penetrating capability is determined by the accelerating voltage that is applied. And it is assumed that entire accelerating voltage is transmitted to the energy of the X-ray beam, which is actually not in voltage, but in electron volts. So, higher the voltage that you apply, the higher the potential amount of energy the X-ray photon can have. The voltage that is applied is called KVP, kilovolts peak, because it's not a DC voltage, but AC. The term energy is used commonly, but of course, voltage is not energy, we know that. But still, KVP is translated to energy, it is related to energy, so it is commonly called energy. Higher KVP means more energy of the X-ray beam or more penetrating power. But the actual unit of energy of the X-ray photon is the electron volt, EV, which is the energy gained by an electron, one single electron, when a potential of 1 volt is applied. So if you use 140 kilovolts, the electron energy will be 140 kilo electron volts, KEV. If that hits the target, and if all of that energy is given to the X-ray photon emitted, then the energy of that X-ray photon is 140 kilo electron volts. That assumes 100% translation of the energy from electron to X-ray photon, which may not happen. So the accelerating voltage that is applied determines the maximum photon energy of the X-rays you can get. But you get a bandwidth. You may get the maximum, but you get a bandwidth up to the maximum determined by the kilovoltage that you apply. So the KVP measure relates to the highest possible X-ray photon energy that can be obtained by using that beam. low energy photons are also created in the beam that is generated, and these are typically absorbed at or near the skin surface. When you have X-ray photons that are less than about 15-20 kiloelectron volts in energy, they're stopped at the skin surface and they'll be absorbed there, and that is a waste, because unless it passes through the body, the photons do not contribute to the image obtained. I'm showing that way, but typically it is the other way, from the back to the front, but it doesn't matter. Suppose you're taking a picture of my hand. If the photons are coming in here, the X-ray photons, and if they are stopped right here, they do not contribute to the picture taken on the other side. So that is unnecessary exposure of my skin on this side to low energy X-ray photons. So typically, the low energy photons are absorbed at the tube by putting a filter made of copper or some other metallic sheet or aluminum, and or sometimes wood. And then those photons do not come through the body. So low energy X-ray photons are typically prevented or absorbed right at the source by using filters. So typical filter elements, materials are aluminum and molybdenum. Now, depending upon the part of the body that you want to image, you have to choose an appropriate photon energy. For soft tissue organs such as the breast, soft X-rays are used in the range of 25 to 32 kilovolt peak. So this band is known as soft energy because the energy is low and is useful for soft tissue imaging. If you use higher kilovoltage peak, KVP, then there will be lower differential attenuation. Suppose you use 60 KVP for imaging the breast, all the photons will just fly through and you will not get good contrast. You'll just get a flat or plain image with no information about the breast. So you need to choose an appropriate photon energy range where there is selective attenuation of the beam within the part of the body being imaged. For abdomen, typically it is 60 to 100 kVp, chest 80 to 120, and for the skull, 70 to 90 kVp. So you consider not only the density of the material, such as the skull or the ribs, but also the thickness. So depending upon the size of the patient, some of these will have to be modified. Exposure is another measure that is used to indicate the total amount of X-ray photons captured or absorbed by the body. So for a given tube voltage KVP, the total number of X-ray photons released from the tube is related to the tube current MA, that is in milliamps, and the exposure time in seconds, typically in milliseconds, but the convention is to express the current in milliamps and the exposure time in seconds, and to get a product that is written as MAS, milliamps times seconds. So you don't put time in milliseconds here. So that product is typically used to indicate a number that is proportional to the number of photons. It's not the number of photons, but it is proportional to that. So for a given body being imaged, the number of photons that arrive at the film is related to this quantity. So depending upon how much contrast you want in your image, you have to allow an appropriate number of photons to come through the body and impinge the film. If you do not allow enough photons to come through, you get a very faint or dull image, like taking a picture with not enough light. So a low MAS results in an underexposed film, faint or light image, whereas a high MAS value results in an overexposed or dark image. If you have too many photons coming through, the film will get all black and there is no information in it. You have overexposed it. So you have to choose an appropriate amount of tube current, milliamps, and the exposure time, how many milliseconds You let the X-rays go through the body and hit the film. And typical exposure values are between 2 and 120 MAS, milliampere seconds. And you have to adjust that. A radiology technologist will know this, and by looking at you and making measurements if necessary, or just knowing your size and the part of the body being imaged, he or she can choose an appropriate KVP and MAS to get a proper image. There are systems where this is done automatically too. So most imaging systems will take first a measurement by using the KVP that is set by the operator. A beam is pulsed quickly, and the amount of photons coming on the other side is measured if there is a detector. And then the total amount of exposure required, MAS, is automatically determined by the system. But that requires a detector. So an initial exposure is used to estimate the penetration through the body, and then the system tells you how many MAS would be required. There are a few other effects that could have an effect on the quality of the image. One is known as beam hardening. The X-rays that you obtain from an X-ray tube in medical imaging systems, in most commonly used medical imaging systems, the X-rays are not monoenergetic. There is a bandwidth. They have X-ray photons over a certain band of electromagnetic frequency or energy level. So when you're told that the photon energy that is used is, let's say, 90 kVp, the bandwidth of the X-ray beam is not just 90 keV, but could be from 20 to 90 keV, depending upon the filter used and the settings of the imaging systems. So there is a certain bandwidth. I mentioned earlier that there is a filter used at the source to stop very low energy photons, less than 20 or 25 kVp or keV. Those X-ray photons are stopped, filtered right at the source. Still, the X-ray photons that are hitting the body at the entry point would have a certain bandwidth. And what happens is that the lower energy photons are absorbed as the beam passes through the body. The higher energy photons have higher penetrating power, so they can go through the body. And of course, they are also lost. Some of those photons are lost, but more of such photons of high kVp pass through. But fewer photons of the lower energy levels will pass through. Low energy photons are absorbed closer to the entry point. So as the beam of X-rays will pass through a body of a certain thickness, the spectrum changes. At the entry, there could be a broad spectrum. But somewhere in the middle, many of the low energy photons are absorbed, and the beam has a narrower bandwidth containing more of the higher energy photons and less of the low energy photons. And as it passes through, the bandwidth becomes narrower and narrower towards the higher energy side, and that effect is known as beam hardening. The beam becomes harder and harder as it passes through the body because the soft energy, softer part of the beam, the low kVp photons, have been absorbed already within the body. So the soft part of the X-ray spectrum will be absorbed at the earlier parts, or early in the sense of passage through the body. And then finally, when the beam comes out, it'll be a harder beam than it was at the beginning. So if you imagine a fairly thick part of the body, such as the abdomen or the chest, then in the second half of that body, the X-ray beam that is going through is of a different composition than in the first half of the body. So the attenuation coefficient would be different for those frequencies. So if you turn the body around and send the X-rays the other way, you would get a different picture because the attenuation characteristics are different. Normally, you would expect to get the same image, whether you send the beam this way or the opposite way. But with beam hardening, the result will be different. So as X-rays propagate through a body, the lower energy photons get absorbed preferentially, depending upon the length of the ray path through the body and the attenuation characteristics. But I mentioned that the attenuation coefficient mu xy is also a function of the wavelength. So it is actually mu xyz lambda, where lambda is the wavelength of the x-rays. We usually ignore that, but you cannot ignore it unless the beam is monoenergetic, which means there's only one photon energy in the beam. So the x-rays that pass through the object at longer distances from the source will possess relatively fewer photons at lower energy levels than at the point of entry. And that is known as beam hardening. So this leads to incorrect estimation of the attenuation coefficient in CT imaging. In a chest X-ray image, when you are just taking a picture using a film or a digital detector and you're only looking at the qualitative aspects of the image, this effect may not be easily seen. Whereas if you're making objective measurements, such as in computed tomography, where you are estimating the density at each pixel in the image, then beam hardening will have an effect. So the effect of beam hardening may be reduced by pre-filtering or pre-hardening the beam, which is done at the source. So before the X-rays will enter the body, you remove as much of the low frequency or low energy X-ray photons from the beam, and that is known as pre-hardening. Those photons that would typically be absorbed closer to the entry point, you remove yourself, and then you may get a better result. If you use monoenergetic X-rays, you resolve this problem. But to get monoenergetic X-rays, you cannot use an X-ray tube based upon an electron source. You have to use a laser source, which may not give you a high energy. Or you could use a synchrotron. Even in synchrotrons, you don't get high KVP values. You get softer beams, and it's more expensive. A synchrotron is a huge setup, a big building, and there are many restrictions and practical difficulties in using synchrotron sources to image human beings, because you cannot turn the synchrotron around the body. Like in a CT image, you can have an X-ray tube that runs around. In a synchrotron, you cannot do that because that's a huge building. The patient will have to be fixed somehow and rotated. That's not possible with human beings. So if you have a small sample, you can use a synchrotron source of X-rays, and the sample is mounted on a turntable, and that turns around to get different projections at different angles. If you just want one image, a planar image, then it is possible to use synchrotron radiation. But synchrotron radiation comes in a fine beam, a fine ray, so you cannot expose the whole body in one shot. So there are difficulties in using synchrotrons for X-ray imaging of humans or larger animals. Scatter is a big issue. Scatter is a bigger issue with light imaging. I mentioned that earlier. It's also big issue with ultrasound imaging. But in X-ray imaging also, there could be scattering. And the effect of scattering is to give you a noisy image. As an X-ray beam propagates through a body, photons are lost due to absorption and also scattering. So when an X-ray photon hits a particular piece of tissue, it could be completely absorbed there, and then you will get its shadow, or it could be scattered and it could go off in a different direction, or a part of the energy could be absorbed by that piece of tissue or that elemental part of the tissue, and then a secondary X-ray could be emitted and that could go in a different direction. So you will get an effect on the image or in the detector plane at a point other than where the beam would have normally hit had it come straight through. So that contributes to noise because some other point in the image is affected, not related to the path of the original beam. So as an X-ray beam propagates through a body, you have loss of photons, both due to absorption and scattering. The angle of the scattered photon is a random variable. The same photon is scattered at an angle that is completely different, a random variable, or the secondary photon that is emitted could be at a completely different angle. So this photon, scattered photon, contributes to noise at some other point where it hits the film or the detector. It also results in loss of contrast because the point where it was attenuated and the point where the beam strikes the film are different. Now, the effect of scatter depends upon the heterogeneity of the object, the nature of the object, and the nature of scattering, the wavelength used, and several other factors. And in gamma ray emission imaging, scatter is more significant. The effect of scatter is more significant. It may be reduced by the use of grids or collimation or energy discrimination in nuclear medicine imaging. In X-ray imaging, grids are used to reduce scatter. An important point about scattered photons is that scattered or secondary photons usually have lower energy levels than the primary photon. So if you are measuring the energy of the photon that you are detecting, and if you know the original energy of the photon, if the measured photon has a lower energy, then you can conclude that it is a scattered photon and not count it. That is possible in nuclear medicine imaging, not in film-based X-ray imaging. In film-based X-ray imaging or planar projection imaging, typically you would use a grid to reduce the effect of scatter. A grid is made up of parallel plates of metal, thin sheets of metal that are placed mutually parallel. This is a section. So these are the plates. And in between the plates, there are small gaps. And these gaps are filled with a certain attenuating material. So if you were to consider this as the body being imaged in section, a cross section, and you have parallel X-rays coming through the body, you would expect these rays to hit along the same path onto the screen film combination. But if there is a scattered photon from this point A, in one case, for example, AB, the scattered photon will hit the grid and it is absorbed by the grid there. So it is not going to hit the film, in this case, AB. In the case AC also, the scatter angle is such that the scattered photon hits the grid and it is stopped by the grid. If the photon comes directly without scattering, in this case, from A to A prime, it hits the film here and there is no effect of scatter. Now, there could be some low scatter angles, such as from A to D, where the angle is such that the scattered photon comes in between the grids and will come and hit the film at a point D. So even with the use of a grid, it is possible that some scattered photons will come through and hit the film at a point different from the beam without scattering. So this scattered photon D will cause either blurring or noise depending upon where it hits the film. Now, one trick that is used here to reduce or to remove, you can't remove, to reduce the shadow cast by the grid on the film, the grid is moved during exposure. It's either oscillated or just translated so that you don't get the shadow off the plates onto the film. Otherwise, you get lines, which of course will ruin your picture. So, in order to avoid getting the shadow of the grid itself on the image, on the film, you need to move it during exposure. Now, sometimes the mechanism that triggers the movement of the grid may introduce some delay, and you may still get a faint shadow of the grid onto the image. And that is an artifact. It is clearly recognized. If you're using parallel grids, you will see parallel lines. There are also other types of grids used where you may have honeycomb type of patterns. And then if a shadow of that grid is cast, you get a different pattern. Typically, with properly operating devices, you should not get an image of the grid on the film or in your image that you capture. Now, because photons are absorbed within the grid, and these photons have already passed through the body, there is some loss of information. And because some photons get absorbed within the grid, you have to put more photons through the body in order to get the same amount of image quantity, the number of photons through to form the image. So this means the X-ray dose to the patient is higher. When you use a grid, you have to apply more X-ray photons through the body in order to get a total amount of contrast and image exposure the same as without the grid. So using the grid is at the cost of additional exposure or increased exposure of X-ray photons to the patient. So there is always a trade-off here. A typical grid that is used has 25 to 80 lines per centimeter. Lines meaning the number of parallel strips. And each strip would be a few millimeters thick. So there is a height to width ratio there. The grid height to strip width ratio is in the range 5 to 1 to 12 to 1. So each grid is a fine sheet of metal strip. And it has a certain height and the thickness. It's about 25 to 80 lines per centimeter. That is the grid frequency. The space between the grids is filled with low attenuation material such as wood, so that in between the grid, you get free passage of the X-ray photons. The rest I have already mentioned, so I'll skip the rest. So here is an image of a phantom. A phantom is an object that is prepared to simulate a certain type of an object that you might encounter in the imaging application of your interest. In breast imaging or mammography, one would expect deposits of calcium called calcifications in the breast related to certain types of breast disease, including cancer. One would expect blood vessels and ducts. So there will be some tubular patterns. One could also expect tumors, which could be circular or oval. So there are phantoms that are created that simulate these characteristics. A phantom could be a physical object with some material arranged in a certain pattern. So this could be, let's say, a box made of plexiglass with certain parts of calcium compounds, some tubes, and some balls made of different material to simulate different densities. And you arrange this in a certain pattern, and then if that particular pattern is standardized and approved by certain societies, such as the X-ray imaging societies, the American College of Radiology, for example, then that becomes a standardized phantom. And that phantom is used to test the quality of imaging systems. And medical physicists who are in charge of quality control of imaging systems would take these phantoms, get images from various systems they are testing, and make sure that the images have a certain quality that could also be measured from these phantoms. The phantoms could have grids and could have mesh patterns of certain frequency that you would like to see on the image. So this particular phantom has deposits of calcium there are six specks of calcium compounds here. And this would simulate the presence of calcifications in the breast. So that's what I'm showing you here. Dr. Hahn took a picture of this. And this is a picture with the grid stopped. The grid is supposed to move during exposure, but he stopped that. So this is what you would get if the grid doesn't work properly. Of course, that would not happen if the technologist were to do a proper job. But you may still get, as I said, a faint image of the grid if there is lack of synchronization between the movement of the grid and the exposure. And I have seen some images in databases of mammograms where the grid artifact is present. So it does happen in practice. This is a picture of the full phantom. These simulate tumors, and these are calcifications, and these are some duct-like patterns. So this is an ACR phantom for mammography. I showed only one part of it.